We need to get the pork out. Now, none of that pork we're talking about is in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut. In fact, it's as far away as Alaska.
No money in the disaster relief bill for Alaska fisheries. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, questions arise about the timing of Shell's drill rig Kullik's exit from Dutch Harbor.
Was this rig being moved in whole or in part for tax reasons?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Last night, Royal Dutch Shell's vice president for Alaska and two Coast Guard commanders updated the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly on the response to the grounding of the floating drill rig Kullik. It was the first public briefing made in Kodiak since the rig went hard aground on Sitkalitik Island in a New Year's Eve storm. KMXT's Jay Barrett has more.
The first question directed at Shell Alaska VP Peter Slaby after his prepared statements to the Borough Assembly got right to the point.
Was this rig being moved in whole or in part for tax reasons? I've seen an article saying that, in fact, that was the case, that it has something to do with the situs of the rig on January 1, determining whether tax would be imposed on it or not.
In response to that question by Assemblyman Mel Stevens, Slaby denied the report, which first appeared in the Dutch Harbor Fisherman newspaper.
That was an unfortunate article. No, the answer is not that it was leaving for taxes. It had very specific things that needed to happen in Everett.
In the article, a Shell spokesman acknowledged state property tax was one of several reasons Shell wanted the rig out of state. The potential tax liability could be in the millions. Slaby cited inspections of the vessel's new generators and replacements of the two cranes on board as reasons it sailed for Washington State, but he did not address the timing of the departure in very late December when winter storms are common in the Gulf of Alaska. Slaby also gave his personal assurance to the Kodiak Assembly that Shell would do everything it could to get the drill rig off the beach of Sitkalitik Island and that his commitment comes right from the top.
I obviously can't guarantee any outcome, but what I can promise this assembly and you, Mr. Mayor, is that we will make our best response possible. I have the support of all the senior managers and leaders in Shell up through the CEO that we will leave no stone unturned in resolving this in a satisfactory manner.
He said Schmidt Salvage is still evaluating the condition of the Kullik and are waiting for more equipment to arrive before trying to pull the huge drilling unit off the sand and gravel beach.
The structural integrity of the Kullik looks good. The Kullik was built, purpose-built, to work in the Arctic, and as a result, it has a hull of, in certain areas, 2 inches, in certain areas, 3 inches of steel. It is double-hulled, and all the fuel components are separated in the interior portions of that vessel.
He said there is extensive damage to the electrical systems on board, possibly a result of seawater coming in through open doors and hatches during the storm. Slaby also gave the assembly a sense of how big of a response Shell is bringing to bear on the situation. He said the company currently has 256 people at one Anchorage hotel, 47 at Kodiak hotels, and 148 on contract vessels, with more people arriving every day. In Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.
Congress has passed the first of two relief bills for Superstorm Sandy. As ABRN's Peter Granitz reports, money for Alaska was not in it.
The Senate passed a $60 billion aid package a couple of weeks ago. Included was more than $60 million to study and prevent marine debris. Also included $150 million for fishery disasters across the country. But it went nowhere in the House, and now that the new Congress has sworn in, the process begins anew. The version passed today is just shy of $10 billion and pays for the flood insurance program. The House is slated to debate the remaining $50 billion when it returns January 15th. San Diego area Republican Daryl Issa says the bill needs to focus on just the Northeast and do so in a timely fashion, meaning leaders need to have a bill settled and ready to go.
We do need to pre-negotiate with the Senate. We need to get the pork out. Now, none of that pork we're talking about is in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut. In fact, it's as far away as Alaska.
But Senator Charles Schumer, a New York Democrat, says it's important to maintain funding for all disasters in this bill, not just related to his part of the country.
If the House wants to take it out, we'll have to deal with that in the Senate. It'll obviously make some people not happy and maybe make it harder to pass.
Make it harder to pass because it would leave senators voting to pay for reconstruction in the Northeast and not their part of the country. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who voted for the aid package, has expressed deep concern over the cost of the bill and whether members are loading it up with projects that can wait for the appropriations process. And it's not just the Alaska money causing concern. New York Democrat Carolyn Maloney says her city's subway system moves 8 million people each day. Some tunnels are still closed, and the federal government needs to pay to reopen them.
You need structural changes to repair them, and then mitigation to hopefully upgrade them in a way that helps you prevent it in the future.
Mitigation. That's a term many Republicans bristle at, saying it shows the project is more an upgrade than an emergency. But the fight is still weeks away. The new 113th Congress has recessed one day after it gaveled in. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The House returns the night of the 14th, while the Senate won't reconvene until January 21st. Historically, Congress has maintained a light work schedule in between congressional swearing-in and the presidential inauguration. Investigators are still trying to figure out the cause of a fire that destroyed a 24-unit apartment building in Midtown Anchorage yesterday morning. Anchorage Fire Department spokesman Al Tamani says it may take a while because of the scale and intensity of the fire. Officials say 10 people stayed at the Red Cross shelter at the Spinard Recreation Center last night. 4 residents remained at the shelter this morning. About 45 people lived in the 24-unit Midtown Calais Arms building. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a big catch of fake Apple products.
I'm not aware of anything in that volume that has come into the country.
And that's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
When the 113th Congress gets to work, Democratic Senator Mark Begich will have some new committee assignments. Begich has secured a seat on the Indian Affairs Committee. He will no longer have a spot on the Budget Committee. Begich also now has a seat on the Powerful Appropriations Committee. He gave up his seat on the Armed Services Committee for the appropriations position. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski will keep all her main committee assignments during the new Congress, including a slot on the Appropriations Committee. Murkowski also will be on Indian Affairs, meaning both Alaska senators will serve on that committee. Murkowski's other committees are Energy and Natural Resources and Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Thousands of counterfeit Apple products were recently intercepted at the Anchorage Airport. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
A large shipment of fake Apple computer products was stopped at the Federal Express Package Handling Facility at the Anchorage Airport just before the Christmas holiday. Customs and Border Protection officers came across the counterfeit products as they were examining a shipment from China to destinations in the lower 48. Frank Falcon is a spokesperson for Customs and Border Protection in San Francisco.
Customs and Border Protection officers opened some packages on a routine basis and discovered approximately $650,000 worth of counterfeit Apple cables and adapters.
Officers made the discovery on December 22nd. A press release says the packaging was substandard. Falcon says this may be one of the largest such busts ever made in the U.S.
I am not aware of anything in that volume that has come into the country. I think that's probably one of the largest that's been intercepted.
Falcon says the counterfeit Apple items will be destroyed, and it's unlikely the shipper will ever be identified. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The head of the state's ferry system is stepping down. Captain Mike Neusel's last day of work as Deputy Commissioner for Marine Operations will be next Friday, January 11th. Neusel has been in the post for just under 2 years, since March of 2011. His departure comes close on the heels of a decision by Governor Parnell to scale back the Alaska-class ferry project, a decision which took even the region's legislators by surprise. Neusel says his resignation is not fallout from the issue.
I wouldn't characterize it that way. It's a mutual agreement between myself and the commissioner, and that's how it's going forward.
Neusel says he's grateful for the opportunity to have worked with the staff in the department and the Marine Highway. He's often been the face of the system when something breaks down, but there's an upside.
Been a very interesting experience dealing with all the communities and actually seeing and realizing how important the ferry system is to the communities that we serve.
There's no official word yet from the DOT on Neusel's replacement. The Juneau chapter of Veterans for Peace hopes to block a proposed gun store with an indoor firing range from being built near the airport. The owners of the facility, which is under construction, plan to allow customers to fire automatic weapons in the range under the supervision of store employees. The veterans group wants the Juneau Assembly and Planning Commission to take a closer look at the proposal. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Juneau Veterans for Peace President Phil Smith says the city's community development staff did not do a thorough review of how the shooting range would affect public health or safety.
There's really no analysis of the security steps that will be taken in the building, and there's no setting of accountability for ensuring that those steps are taken. There's nothing about reviewing the backgrounds of those who want to use the facility. So there doesn't seem to be any accountability.
Smith also thinks it's likely the project developers had private conversations with members of the Planning Commission and Juneau Assembly, which may have influenced permitting of the project. The gun store and shooting range is being developed by Juneau Mercantile and Armory, a limited liability company co-owned by Planning Commission member Dan Miller.
The commission in particular, it's an adjudicative body. And obviously there will be two sides to most issues that come before them, and they broker based upon a record that is developed publicly. And we think the record is very thin.
Miller declined to comment on the appeal, but at an assembly meeting in November, he said the shooting range would be enclosed in a concrete basement where noise and safety would not be an issue. The city's Deputy Community Development Director, Greg Cheney, says the project review gathered input from other departments, including Juneau Police.
There really isn't much that they're worried about. These type of weapons are legal within the city and borough of Juneau. And to be using them in a basement that's designed for it is probably the safest place that they could be discharged.
Initially, the Planning Commission was unable to approve a conditional use permit for the project. That's because a city ordinance banning the discharge of firearms within a quarter mile of a road did not include an exemption for private gun ranges. The Assembly changed the ordinance to allow private ranges at the November meeting where Miller spoke along with project opponents. Cheney disputes the notion that Miller or his business associates may have had off-the-record discussions about the project with members of the Planning Commission or Assembly.
I talked to Mr. Miller quite a bit about this. when the item was considered by the Planning Commission, he recused himself and left the room, which is not required, but is good form. So, you know, I think it's kind of a groundless accusation at this point.
Smith says Veterans for Peace wants the Assembly to accept the appeal and either deny the permit or remand it to the Planning Commission. If it goes back to the commission, the group is asking commissioners to appoint a citizen committee made up of school, religious, mental health, and shooting sports representatives to review the proposal. Smith says the goal is not to ban guns, but rather to make sure safety is adequately considered.
Most of us veterans, of course, served in the armed forces in order to protect our Constitution and swore an oath to do so. We're not trying to weaken or undermine anybody's individual rights, but we are trying to review and make sure that our collective rights as a community are not jeopardized by an unwise public policy decision.
Smith says the group's decision to appeal the permit was made before the recent mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut, which thrust the issue of gun control into the national spotlight. Cheney says mass shootings were discussed by the Planning Commission, but it's an issue that's outside the panel's purview. The Assembly will decide whether to accept or reject the appeal at its meeting on Monday. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The annual survey count for the endangered Cook Inlet belugas has been released, and as in years past, it has not changed much. NOAA scientists counted 312 whales last summer and fall, up 28 animals from the 2011 count, but the uptick is not considered significant, and scientists say the belugas are still in a slow decline. Kim Sheldon is a biologist with the National Marine Mammal Lab in Seattle. She says although the count continues to show a downward trend over the last decade, they were excited to see belugas in the lower part of Cook Inlet last summer.
We came across a group as we were returning to the upper inlet that was making its way across to West Foreland. And it was very exciting for us. We haven't seen belugas in the lower inlet since about 2001 when we had a sighting down in Kachemak Bay of just, I believe, a single animal.
She says scientists are hopeful to continue studying the animals depending on funding levels. She says there's a lot of factors that need to be researched.
There's proposals to, you know, get out and biopsy Cook Inlet belugas just to get an idea of what kind of contaminant loads, you know, things, reproductive levels, just fatty acid content, what prey are they targeting?
The Cook Inlet beluga is a distinct genetic population and was listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act in 2008. NOAA spokeswoman Julie Spiegel says a recovery plan is in the works and should be available for public review in the spring.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Lonnie Dupree, an Arctic explorer from Minnesota, is gearing up for his third attempt at a January solo summit of North America's highest mountain. Although we haven't yet had a chance to talk to him about the preparations for this month's effort, Annie Feit caught up with him on his last try. And so today, we offer this archived edition of AK that originally aired in January of 2012.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon, Wrangell, Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Matt Miller. Today on AK, going to extremes. It's hard to imagine a person crazy enough to want to climb Denali alone in the depth of winter, but Minnesota adventurer Lonnie Dupree has tried and failed twice in the last 2 years. Earlier this month, heavy winds forced him to abandon his latest attempt and retreat back to base camp. AK's Annie Feit caught up with him before he left the state and has this story.
On Lonnie Dupree's last few days in Alaska, the weather was clear, and from a distance, Denali looked majestic and inviting. Dupree couldn't help wondering if he should have still been up there, making a push for the summit.
After you get down off a mountain like that, you keep looking back up at it going, oh, it looks like a good day to get up there. It looks like a day. But I've been looking at the winds aloft. And like yesterday was up there was minus 38 degrees with a 42 knot wind. So like the wind chill index would be like minus 100 or something, you know, some crazy number like that.
So instead, Dupree is at the Howard Johnson in downtown Anchorage, rummaging through three huge duffel bags, looking for a few key pieces of gear.
Boots.
Dupree is loaning the Anchorage Museum some of the things he couldn't live without on the mountain for their upcoming exhibit on Denali. They'll display an expedition anorak, wolverine mittens, and his prized birch wood skis.
I had them custom made wood skis.
Why wood?
Because I wanted to bring a little bit of Minnesota with me.
Like Dupree, the skis have survived some harsh conditions on the mountain. During his recent trip, the winds were especially strong and relentless. Dupree was forced to spend nearly a week in a tiny snow cave at 14,000 feet, where he filed this audio postcard.
The weather's been very fickle, and we have 50-mile-an-hour winds up here right now. So it's been supreme effort of patience to, of course, stay in this little cave for this long.
After 16 days on the mountain, with the extended weather forecast looking grim, Dupree decided to descend. But getting back down to base camp turned out to be a harrowing experience. He was blown off his feet in an area called Squirrel Hill. Then, just 3 miles from base camp, he got caught in a blizzard. At first, it didn't seem like much, but then the wind and snow picked up.
It was blowing so much snow sideways that it was suffocating to breathe. And the snow was sticking to my beard. And so, I mean, I had a sheet of ice over my face. It was hard to breathe. So I had to pick a hole in that ice so I could breathe through it. And then I said, well, no big deal. I'll just dig down.
But when he started shoveling, he hit glacial ice in just 3 feet. Not enough room for a solid snow cave. He stumbled to another area and found the same thing. So he made do with a cave that was so low he couldn't even take a drink from his water bottle sitting up. Exhausted from digging, he went to sleep hoping for the best.
I didn't know for sure if I was going to make it or not for a short period of time there.
But when he woke up in the middle of the night, the wind was gone and he could see the full moon shining through the thin roof of his snow cave. He resumed his descent to base camp. In less than 12 hours, Dupree went from fearing for his life to remembering why he loves these types of adventures.
It was a completely magical moment. It was like everything was in a crisp black and white photograph. It was beautiful. And it's those kind of things that are the rewards that you get for the hardships you endure up there.
Dupree has spent the last 25 years finding those rewards in remote Arctic environments, including a 4-year circumnavigation of Greenland. He documents the experiences in a new book called Life on Ice. Dupree doesn't seem like the type who could sit still long enough to write a book, but in the spring of 2002, fate intervened when he broke both of his legs falling off a roof he was working on.
As a carpenter, breaking your legs in May, the start of construction season, was a bummer. But I tried to make the most of it and looked at it optimistically and said, okay, I'm going to take this summer and write.
He pulled together his journals and photographs and started whittling down the material. Nearly 10 years later, the book is finally out. Dupree saw a copy for the first time in Talkeetna after coming down off the mountain. As for the next adventure chapter in his life, Dupree isn't sure yet. But after 2 winter attempts on Denali, he does know one thing.
It's doable. It's doable. But it's only doable when the wind dies down a little bit so you can actually get up there.
So does that mean you're going to try again?
Oh.
Dupree hems and haws. A week ago, fresh off the mountain, he was sure he would never go back. But he says he's already starting to forget all the hardships. For AK, I'm Annie Feit.
And now for 300 Villages. We're off to Old Harbor. The picturesque Kodiak Island Village is located on a narrow strip of beach at the foot of a steep mountain.
I'm
My name is Phyllis Clough, and I work at the Old Harbor School. I'm the secretary cook. I've been working here for about 30-some years. It's beautiful. You know, everybody is pretty close. We have about 260 people was the last count that they did. It's a village. You have to rely on airplanes to get out. It's not like living in urban Alaska, you know, so you have to really love it. We have community potlucks with the tribal council. We have gatherings at the school. There's basketball at the school. There's archery. There's all kinds of things going on in the school, you know, student council cheerleading. The majority of the people rely on subsistence, fish, crab, deer, seal. Yeah, the majority of the people are Russian Orthodox. Our church withstood the tidal wave in 1964. I was only 2 years old, so I don't remember what happened. You know, for a while there, it was actually shrinking, but in the last couple of years, we've had like 3 families come back, which is really nice. We even had a coffee shop open up here. So it's actually exciting to see that. We're trying to get more jobs. You know, we've had a new dock, a new boat harbor, new jobs. The water treatment center is brand new. I mean, we have a lot of people here that care about the community and want to see it be successful for the future.
That was Phyllis Clough from Old Harbor. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Annie Feit and Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.